Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your armada advice. Different orders resolve at different times. You have to decide whether or not to take a token right after you flip the dial. Then squadron and engineering orders resolve right after that. Concentrate fire orders resolve during attacks, of course, and navigation orders resolve in the determined course step. This order of operations is very important to know, so only entrust it to your best astromech. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 18th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim. It's been pretty busy here. That was much longer of a break than I was imagining would be between episodes. So this is going to be a light episode, no objective talk this time, but I'll hit two rogues to make up for it. First off, the League at my local store just finished up, and the Imperials held out to win by a mere 5 points. I tried to go both a little less and a little more wacky this time around in mission design. I stopped making up as many odd rules and instead made more mishmashes of existing objectives. I'll be posting the missions up soon, so you can see what I mean. One thing I learned from this one is that if you use the last Imperial mission, you might want to disallow the Interdictor's Gravwell projector. It made for a very frustrating game for one of our Rebel players when an Imperial decided to take two Interdictors with them and forced the entire Rebel fleet to start at speed zero. Of course, they paid for that by having two Interdictors right in range of Admiral Akbar's broadsides, but it was still very frustrating when you can't spend defense tokens. I'm going to be keeping a close eye on when the Corellian campaign is likely coming out to see if we're going to fit in one more League before I run that at around the table. This time, we had 11 players, and one dropped out. Then we replaced them with another player who showed up, so next time, we might have 12 players for the League. A listener asked me what I thought the future of Armada will look like. After all, there's only so many capital ships in the Star Wars universe, and not nearly as many as there are ships for X-Wing to use. So, here's my totally unofficial take on it. Assuming that the Rebels show doesn't keep pumping out ship designs to be used, what we'll see is one or two crossover ships, like an Imperial Nebulon B. We'll see ships from the new movies, like the Resurgent Star Destroyer if we get more good guy ships in Episode 8 to balance it out, along with some repaints of existing ships to match versions in Rogue One. Finally, while FFG has been against using Clone Wars ships in the past, with the ARC 170 coming out, I'm guessing we're going to see those coming. I may not be a fan of the prequels, but the ship designs were good, even if they disregarded the Z-95 and ignored the Y-Wing as being the state-of-the-art fighter bomber it should have been in favor of new designs they could make new toys out of, but I digress. Venators, Peltas, even the Separatist and Trade Federation ships would be cool, and give them a couple more waves to work with. I suppose they might even think about putting in a new faction. But my question would be whether those ships would be Imperial or Rebel-aligned without a new faction. I'm going to say that they're going to cross over a bit, but who knows what the balance wizards at Fantasy Flight will come up with. Okay, let's talk rogues. Today, it's going to be all Corellian transports all the time, and we're starting with the YT-2400. I'm just going to come out and say it. The 2400 is the new A-Wing. Yes, at 16 points, it's pretty expensive, but that 5 points buys you Rogue, and you can run them totally independently. There's been good success in tournaments with 2400 spam, and that's for very good reason, as they basically have no downside. The YT-2400 has speed 4, so it's great at getting where it needs to be. 6 hull means it'll take the hits, and 4 blues against squadrons and a black against ships means it can dish it back out. Unsupported, one or two YT-2400s are going to be little more than a speed bump against other squadrons, since they lack defense tokens or something like counter, so I wouldn't advise that as a plan. But in larger numbers, they're the best thing the Rebels can currently put forth, and you can focus the rest of your fleet on ship killing while the 2400s run on their own. They lack bomber, but remember that black dice are a 75% chance to do damage, and that's solid. Using them as part of a more varied force is a little tricky, though. At speed 4, they occupy a weird gap in the Rebel fighter array, where they're not as fast as A-wings and faster than the Ys and Xs, so using them with something else means that a squadron probably isn't getting used to its full potential. That said, obviously Jan Ors is going to synergize well with them, as she's a friend to any non-ace squadron, though since they don't have escort to protect her, she's not as good with them as she is with, say, X-wings. Those Xs can protect the 2400s and have the same anti-fighter battery as they do, with only one less health, so they're not a bad choice to run alongside for a solid HP buffer against squadron wings. I like running them with A-wings to give my opponent the choice of nabbing the A-wings quickly, as they only have 3 hull points, but sucking down counter hits in return that allows the 2400s to mop them up that much faster, or attacking the more threatening 2400s, which will take longer to kill, and then the A's can use their solid 3 dice that much longer. But overall, I like running 2400s with other 2400s, be they Dash or just Vanilla, as well as with Han. The Corellian Freighter Attack Fleet is an impressive one that will give you results. Great stats plus Rogue means when in doubt, go 2400. Dash Rendar in his Outrider is the ace for the YT-2400. He boasts the exact same stats as a base 2400, but adds in the bomber ability, 2 braces, and his special of getting a reroll for every enemy ship or squadron at range 1 of him. He's 24 points, and he's worth every one of them. And I should clarify here. Dash's ability lets him reroll 1 die per enemy at range 1. So range 1 with 3 enemies while attacking another squadron means he can reroll 3 of his dice. But if he's attacking a ship, there's only 1 die in his attack, so that's just 1 reroll 1 time, no matter how many enemies he's close to. While I might sing the praises of him, don't get cocky when you use him, kid. Those abilities might make him look like he should be thrown into the middle of a dogfight, but he's not going to last long unsupported. Dash is part of this complete Rebel Squadron breakfast, and needs other fighters and careful placement to not just be 24 points for your opponent's victory point pool. Dash has a lot of roles he can fill in the right lists. He can run as an anti-squadron bully alongside some X-Wings, letting him get engaged with multiple enemies and re-roll as many of his dice as possible to maximize his damage. He can intercept smaller wings of fighters and kill them himself in fairly short order, but more than 2, and he's probably in trouble. Once squadrons are dealt with or under control, he can make bombing runs with the best of them, as he'll always be at range 1 of the ship he's firing on, so he'll get that reroll on a black die, making him a virtual lock to do a damage. And if you're lucky enough to have a bomber command center nearby, he's basically guaranteed for 1 damage, and his hit crit likelihood is pretty sturdy when you have 2 rerolls. Finally, and while I don't suggest it, but it could work, he's probably the best Rebel Assassin squadron they have currently. If there's an ace you absolutely need to kill, like Dengar, use your other squadrons to lock the rest of the fighters down and have Dash's speed 4 get him into position around any escorts and still be in the thick of your opponent's fighter wing, and re-roll those dice to get the precious accuracies that you'll need to negate the scatter defense and maximize your damage. With decent luck, you should be able to pull down almost any ace with a couple of turns of firing. Just don't expect Dash to survive past that, and you have to weigh his 24 points against the benefits of killing that enemy ace. Dash is a solid addition to any list, since he can run on his own, you can send him away to attack ships, or keep him around to intercept or support your fighter wing. If you can find the 24 points for him, add him in. After the break, we're going to talk about the rogue who started it all and made the Kessel run in 14 parsecs.
12!
14.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington.
They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
We're back, and let's look at a stock light freighter, the YT-1300. Remember when I talked about how the YV-666 doesn't fill much of a role, especially at speed 2? Well, this speed 2 ship absolutely does. Yes, it's slow, but it is a pure tank of a ship. The 1300 runs the same 13-point cost of an X-Wing, and while it doesn't have the same jack-of-all-trades, master-of-none stat line, it doubles down on the escort role and fills it to a YT. It has a whopping 7 hull, putting it at the top of the current heap, with 3 blue anti-squadron battery and a mediocre 1 blue against ships. But it's not there to attack capital ships. It's there to protect your other squadrons as they get into position. Much like if you've ever played any sort of MMO, especially World of Warcraft, the YT-1300 is a tank. It's designed to pull aggro, or aggravation, from other enemies and make them attack it first, absorbing all of the damage so that your damage per second, or DPS, can shoot and burn down those enemies as quickly as possible. It's got escort, and puts a cherry on top with counter one. Given their slow speed, I'd say you could also run a couple of them as an escort for something like an MC-80, but in the age of intelled Rimer balls, I don't know that it would do too much as they can't cut through enemy fighters fast enough just by themselves. Due to their speed, they work optimally with B-wings, since you don't have to worry about outpacing them. However, they also work very well with Y-wings and Skurgs as an escort, since they only have to slow down a little bit. 1300s also benefit greatly from the fighter coordination team to get that extra boost before they make contact with the enemy. With that slow speed too, though, you're going to get outmaneuvered a lot by enemy fighters that can tie them up out of position and lock down the rest of the bomber wing before you can intercept with your escorting 1300s. That's why I advise running them with two different options to support. First, a couple of A-wings to jump out and hold up that fighter wing until the 1300s can get there and keep them there. This gives you a lot of flexibility as well, since A-wings can do decent jobs at bombing runs themselves if being interceptors isn't needed. That's all fine and good, of course, but naturally, the elephant in the room is to pair them with Jan Ors. You can just use a regular HWK with them and do okay, but Jan is basically an auto-include with 1300 escorts. 7 hull with braces that can't be accuracied gives them astounding staying power, and the intel allows the bombers to keep on trucking, negating any outmaneuvering attempts your opponent brings to the table. No, the 1300s won't kill off many, if any, fighters that they intercept, but that's not what they're there for. You can always add some non-bombers to the list if you want more squadron killing power to help them out, but remember that you can also swing a ship or two past the dogfight to throw an arc's worth of firepower in to help. X-Wings are faster escorts and can attack ships and squadrons fairly well, but when it comes to actually doing the job of escorting your other squadrons to their goal, the YT-1300 is the best the Rebels have. They're slow, but they'll get the job done. So, Han Solo. This swaggering rogue gets an extra speed, boosting up to a respectable 3, gains grit, and boosts its attack values to 2 black, 2 blue against fighters, and a blue-black combo against ships. He can always shoot first, and costs a staggering 26 points to field. That can cause some sticker shock, but I can tell you that the Millennium Falcon has saved my bacon more times than any other upgrade or unit in the game. The ability to activate him before anything else can go in a round lets him swoop in on a ship that only has 1 point left and hit it before it can bring back shields or do other repairs, then killing it, even when you don't have initiative. Han can also use that with grit to open fire on one squadron and then either leap away to safety or go and engage a different squadron that needs to be held down that round. It's amazing flexibility that you pay through the nose for, but Han's very much worth it in my view. Now, Han's got some drawbacks, don't get me wrong, That blue-black combo will make short work of regular squadrons, but you're unlikely to get needed accuracies against aces, so don't expect him to do assassination runs. Likewise, he lacks bomber, so attacks on ships aren't going to be crippling them, but they will be pretty reliable for a point when you need it. And his speed of 3 means he's not going to be jumping around the battlefield too much, and not able to pursue the faster fighters or ships, though he can get a single round jump on them with shooting first. You have to be really careful about biting off more than you can chew with Han. Like Dash, he's not going to last long when he's solo against a fighter wing. Keep an eye on what can reach him later in the round if you're going to be activating him first, and try to minimize what can get to him, not just for keeping him alive, but for maximizing his grit ability. If you can keep him on the outskirts of a fight, Han should be a dancer on the field, never getting locked down for long and skipping from fight to fight and ship to ship, going where he's much needed for a last-minute save. Coming out of nowhere to knock Darth Vader out of the way on a trench run, anyone? That's what he does. Because of that, Han basically works in any list, much like Dash, though Han operates much more on his own. Han's pricey, but he's my favorite squadron that the Rebels can field. My most important advice is to remember to activate him first. Sometimes your opponent will set their dials first and want to jump right into activating ships before you can get your thoughts turned away from what dials and activation order you want for your ships to if you want to get the Falcon going, and it's easy to forget about him, especially if you're also first player and you get excited about taking a shot with another ship. As always, just practice with him, and after you've forgotten for a couple of crucial turns, I bet you'll be remembering him in the future. Just try to make sure those crucial turns are in friendly games and not tournaments, and you'll be fine. That's it for this episode. Next time, we'll be back for more objective talk, and I'll remember that I was actually supposed to talk about Boba Fett this episode. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Course plotted, all wings report in, Admiral.
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.